Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and happy Sag full moon. On today's episode, I'm going to get into what may be happening with you and your personal birth chart during this Sag full moon. So I'm going to go through each and every house. So you'll definitely need your birth chart out for this episode, and I actually want you to locate which astrological house that Sag rules in your chart. So definitely get that out right now. And later in the episode, I'm also going to get in a little bit to a sort of introductory episode on the aspects in our birth chart. And I'm going to give you a very basic interpretation of what the aspects are in a chart and sort of how to use them and start getting familiar with your own aspects in your birth chart. Now, quick shout out to Snowflake Healing, my place of work in the Chicago suburbs. Thank you for being my place, my recording studio today. So if you are in the Chicagoland area and you're looking for an excellent metaphysical shop with psychics, Reiki practitioners, and pretty much all of the metaphysical supplies you could ever imagine, crystals, singing bowls, books, etc., come on over to Snowflake Healing. Quick plug there, but let's just jump right into the Sag full moon. So when we have a full moon, speaking of aspects, right? So what actually is happening when we have a full moon? An aspect is happening in the sky, and that aspect would be called an opposition. So we have the opposition between the sun in Gemini and the moon in Sagittarius, and that is actually the aspect that creates a full moon. So today, Monday, June 17th, 2019, is our full moon in Sag, but I want us to think back actually to December 7th, 2018, and that's when we had our new moon in Sag. Now, I like to think of sort of the new moons and the full moons in sort of like this six-month process of transformation. Each new moon starts off a six-month cycle, and the full moon is going to close it out. So I want you to think back to December 2018. And first off, what was going on during that time? And secondly, just think of how much you've accomplished since then. I think in today's society, we tend to sort of disassociate from the things that we've accomplished because we're so focused on just doing the bigger and the better next thing. We don't even really sit back and consider how much we've grown. This could be spiritually, this could be mentally, this could even be physically. But right now, just take a moment, and I'm actually going to take a deep breath and like feel into just how much me and you, how we have transformed in the past 6 months since the Sagittarius new moon. Now, anytime a big lunar event like a full moon or a new moon happens in Sagittarius, it's kind of a big time for manifesting, definitely from a spiritual place. But if you remember, we do have that opposition, right? So the sun is still in Gemini and the moon is in Sag. So what does the opposition between Gemini and Sag really mean? Well, I think actually a big part of that energy is about the short term versus the long term. I would say out of all the signs, actually Gemini might be the best at living in the moment, which is actually quite a profound gift to have at this point in time, right? Because so many of us have so much trouble actually appreciating the present moment. And then when we have the moon in Sag, well, Sag isn't so much about the present moment. It's more about our future. Sag, the archetype, if you remember, is the centaur shooting off its arrow and going far places to see where its arrow has landed. So I would say the Sag energy of this full moon may be having us make a lot of manifestations, have the feeling of really needing to like write down and cast a spell and manifest our future in a really big way, whereas the Gemini energy of the sun is still asking us to, hey, it's totally okay to manifest for the future, but don't forget to find gratitude in the present moment. And don't forget to sort of find appreciation and gratitude and give yourself a pat on the back for just how much you've accomplished since December 2018. I actually kind of have a feeling that me and the collective listeners, since we're all sort of meeting on the same frequency, I have a feeling that we've all really, really transformed mind, body, and spirit in the last 6 months. But also at the same time, there's been a feeling in the past couple weeks of frustration, right? The astrological weather may have us feeling like things are just not going fast enough. We're trying to build Rome in a day, but we can't. We're trying to really do big things and put all these big things and place our orders into the universe, yet we may feel like unsatisfied with what we have in front of us. And I'm totally guilty of this too, right? That's why I really appreciate this Sag full moon, because it actually reminds us, yeah, it's always okay to manifest for the future. But don't forget about all the things you've already accomplished, and don't disassociate from that feeling of happiness and accomplishment right now. So yeah, in a second, I'll definitely get into what's going to happen for you in your individual chart. I would say just some other little things. I've never really done this on my podcast, like assigned a crystal or a goddess to the moons, but I might start doing it because for some reason this morning I just kind of felt called to dedicate a crystal that's really been helping me lately. I wanted to dedicate an orange calcite to this Sagittarius full moon. I actually have an orange calcite sitting right next to me, and if you're unfamiliar with this crystal, orange calcite is sort of amazing for promoting adventure. It's really good for that creative thinking. It's excellent for the sacral chakra. I've actually been crystal gritting my body lately because I've really felt like I needed to energetically release a lot of things. And I've been placing, amongst other things, I've been placing the orange calcite on my sacral chakra whenever I can, and it's really been sort of helping me transform, helping me release some fears and blockages that are keeping me from having that, let's say, that true Sagittarius spirit, right? Orange calcite, like I said, it's amazing if you are like a homebody who kind of feels a little bit more prone to being a hermit, or you know, spending a lot of time by yourself, and you're trying to push yourself to have some more adventures, meet more people, get outside of your comfort zone. I would say orange calcite is an excellent crystal, and the energy of orange calcite really, really reminded me of the Sag full moon. So if you are looking for a crystal that has the said properties, don't walk, run to your local metaphysical shop and grab yourself an orange calcite. So for the goddess for this Sag full moon, now I was really wanting to pick like a very scholarly goddess, you know, because the Sag archetype is the scholar, is the pursuer of truth, is the philosopher. And again, this full moon does have a lot to do with us pursuing our truths. And again, I'll talk about that as I get into the individual placements. So I was thinking about how technically this, I call her a goddess, but she's actually just like a person in history. Her name is Pope Joan. And I think I might have mentioned her on this podcast before. I can't really remember, but she's an archetype that I have worked with this year. I want to work with her a little bit more closely in the coming months, but Pope Joan is sort of the goddess or the archetype or the historical character that I want to sort of dedicate to this Sagittarius full moon. And let me tell you why. Pope Joan was is masked in history as Pope John the Eighth. So she was like a legitimate pope in the Catholic Church in Rome, in like around year 18 or sorry 850. So really long time ago, like during the Middle Ages, Rome actually elected a female pope. Now, of course, this has been erased from history because, the world would just end if we ever had a female pope, God forbid. So again, this could be considered a legend, but in the way that I've connected with the archetype of Pope Joan, I really truly feel like it's not a legend. I think it's been branded into being a legend or an old wives' tale, just because, like, think of the implications if we really did have a female pope, right? Like, what would actually happen if that was allowed? The patriarchy would just crumble. So the story of Pope Joan was actually is, we can't be sure of what happened again because, like, the documents, from year 1850 aren't, around anymore. Actually, I'm of the belief that the Catholic Church during that time, after they murdered Pope Joan, I think they tried to rid pretty much any document that would have ever said she existed. And if I'm remembering correctly from the book that I read on Pope Joan, they actually made it like almost illegal to even say her name because it was like such a disgrace that, we had a female pope. So, anyways, the story of Pope Joan is debated. Some people kind of make it into a tale of a pope being sort of disguised as a man or as a man, even though she was a woman. Another story will tell you that people were already aware that Pope Joan was a woman and she was still elected into the position of pope or popus. Actually, by the way, Rider-Waite, he refers to the high priestess as a Pope Joan sort of figure. So I think it's interesting that the high priestess and Pope Joan are somehow connected. Now, Pope Joan, I think, is the perfect archetype of the Sagittarius full moon because she was sort of creating her own version of truth. And although she was like a very traditional woman, I take it. I mean, she had to be pretty smart and she had to be pretty on top of her biblical studies in order to be elected pope, and she definitely had to have been a woman of God, quote unquote. Yet, she challenged probably the people around her. She was challenging the patriarchy, and in order to be elected in this position. And I think the Sag full moon is having us challenge our own traditions, if that makes sense. It's sort of having us interpret our dogmas and our truths and sort of reinterpret them for ourselves and really pin down where does this truth that I've been carrying come from? Where does this dogma that I promote come from? Does it really come from me, or does it come from someone else? Does it come from my church? Does it come from my parents? Does it come from society? Do I really believe this thing, or is this just something I've been conditioned to believe, right? So, getting back to Pope Joan, although she was definitely a revolutionist, where her life ended abruptly was when she actually gave birth while she was pope. And that led to the murder of her and her baby. So again, there's different variations of the story, but some will say that people were okay with a woman being pope, but then the minute it was sort of found out that Pope Joan had sex and had a conception of a baby, that's when it sort of went wrong, and that's when it was sort of like, oh man, like we can't have a pope who's having sex, even though, right, almost, I would probably say, what do you think? vast majority of popes in history had sex, had multiple children, had mistresses. The only difference being that those popes were men, right? So if they conceived a baby, no one would find out about it because it would have been their mistress who had to carry their baby, right? But yet Pope Joan, who really did the same thing as a male pope did, she was punished, right? And she was killed on the street in Rome because of sort of the crumbling image of her quote-unquote virginity or her purity. So that brings me again back to this idea of truth, back to this idea of dogma, back to this idea of philosophy, and how important it is for us to discover those things for ourselves, as Pope Joan did. And I think that, my boss made a Pope Joan candle, and she said when she was talking to Pope Joan, the kind of phrase that Pope Joan gave her was knowledge above all. So I think when we are discovering our own version of truth, we really have to do our research. We have to consider all sides of the equation. We have to be able to listen to our enemy, quote unquote, in order to hear what is actually right and what is actually moral and what is actually ethical. So these are some of the things that I'm thinking about during this Sag full moon. Granted, I have more things that I'm personally thinking about, but I'll leave those to be sacred. But I will tell you that as I'm recording this episode, I've got about 5 candles going next to me. I've got like a full-blown spell in the process. And I am working on things that have to do with my 5th house, because Sagittarius rules my 5th house. So besides that, that's all I'm going to say about that, because I like to keep my spells sacred. And by the way, speaking of that, I do want to figure out a way to talk a little bit more about witchcraft and do another like beginner's guide to witchcraft or spell work episode. And maybe that'll be next week. But I'm trying to sort of figure out how to do that while also keeping my own practice sacred, because I am a practicing witch, and I think witchcraft definitely does make its way into my daily life, and I, you know, work with different goddesses and things like that, yet I don't find myself like wanting to share that a lot on my podcast or even on Instagram. I share bits and pieces here and there. Just because, witchcraft is sacred, so I don't think I'm ever going to share, like, a spell. Let's say I'm never going to share the details of a spell that I'm doing, let's say, right now. just because they're sacred, and I think it's sort of when you talk about a spell or a ritual that you do, it loses its power, and I think for like my ultimate like power and my manifestations and the agreements that I have with my goddesses and my ancestors, I do like to keep something sacred and secret to me. Yet I do want to share more. So I think I'm trying to figure out a sort of beginner's guide to spell work that I can do for you guys without like fully, like I said, like discussing my personal practice. And I'm not saying that to be like, oh, you guys can't know, it's secret, but I'm more saying that in a sacred way. And I'm totally not like bashing anybody who does share their spells or their rituals like on Instagram or whatever, but I don't know if I'm ever gonna be that type of witch, just because it's, you know, it's serious, and to me at least. And what I mean by that is, it's just something that I don't really like to share with everybody. So yeah, that's kind of the deal with the Sag full moon. So again, we've got that Pope Joan energy, we have that orange calcite energy, and then we just have the energy of truth. And I think we also have the energy of, you know, this dichotomy between the short term and the long term. Now you may be saying, okay, Mal, I get it, kind of. You're kind of confusing me. but what does this Sag full moon mean to me? Well, now I want you to get out your birth chart. And I'm going to sort of read a little bit about what I've written for each different house. So why don't you take a look at your birth chart and locate which house is ruled by Sagittarius in your birth chart. So here are my little interpretations. And again, they all have to do with our sense of truth and our sense of purpose. But a little bit different depending on which house is being illuminated by this Sag full moon. So if you're a Sag rising or you have Sagittarius ruled by your first house, I would say you are really focusing on, during this full moon, you're focusing on the truth about how you show up in this world. What do I mean by that? I'm meaning, do you show up to this world truly and authentically yourself? Is there any fear about showing up and being seen for who you truly are? The one example that I thought of was sort of, let's say there's a person who dresses like super punk rocker, like on the weekends, but you know, to their job, they show up really like boring librarian and they don't feel like they can truly express like who they are in the workplace through their clothes. This might be an opportunity for the Sag full moon to sort of show up as more of yourself and show up more fully you and how you would like to be seen. Can I say that I think in, at least in Western society, I think there's such a big focus on like a dress code and like what's appropriate to wear at what times. Now, I have Saturn in Pisces, so like you tell me there's a dress code and I'm gonna show up in like nipple tassels and like a cheetah thong or something. No, I'm kidding. But that's what I'm gonna wanna do, because just the premise of dress codes really piss me off, right? So I think if you do have this Sag full moon going through the first house, it's sort of like, where have you been dress coding yourself? And I mean that metaphorically. I might mean that physically, but I mean that more metaphorically. Like, where are you putting limitations on how you can show up in this world? And where does it feel more authentic for you to pull that back? So if your second house is ruled by Sag, I would say this full moon is going to bring you some truths about your money situation. So I would say you're probably questioning, do I have a fear of money? Why do I have a fear about money? It's sort of like the transformation between, like, currently, if you feel like you are your bank account's bitch, it's sort of like, how can I make my bank account my bitch? Like I want my money to work for me. I don't want to have to work for my money. I don't want to be in fear of my money. I want to have a good and healthy relationship with the things that I'm earning. I would say that if you do have this Sag full moon going through your second house, you may want to consider, I've seen this going around YouTube a lot specifically, but there's like this idea of a no buy year, or it's kind of a little late to start that for 2019, but you may want to consider doing sort of a no buy month, which entails like not buying anything that you don't need, right? Like no new clothes, no new makeup, etc., etc. Anywhere where you feel like you generally overspend, this is a good opportunity to sort of not buy those things and see what happens. Like, do you feel like you're, you know, examining how money is affecting your self-worth and self-esteem? Is this no-buy sort of time making you feel anxious, or do you feel liberated at the end of it? I actually think when it comes to money and buying and spending, we sort of have to sometimes go cold turkey and not spend anything to really get to know our relationship with money, if that makes sense. Now, if you have your third house in Sagittarius, I would say this full moon is highlighting how you can better communicate your personal truth. It's sort of like, how can you show up more authentically with how you are stating your truth? What are you afraid to say during this time? And I would also say that you may be investigating the truth or lack thereof behind your thought patterns. So you may be asking yourself, is this story that I'm telling myself really true? Am I fully speaking my truth, or am I afraid? Is there something that I need to say to myself or others in order to expand? And will I live my life more in alignment if I speak my truth more loudly? At the very least, the Sag full moon going through your third house could be about you learning to say no right now. Maybe there are a lot of things that's kind of coming through from spirit, but maybe there are a lot of things that you are just needing to say no to, and that's totally okay. Now, if this Sag full moon is hitting your fourth house, so in other words, if your fourth house is ruled by Sagittarius, we're sort of focusing on the home and the private life. So I would actually say, like, intuitively, I was more feeling like this was going to highlight the truths we learned as children and how these childhood truths may not actually be in alignment with our adult versions of ourselves. And, you know, maybe during this time, as adults, we are finally discovering that we don't actually believe this or that about ourselves. And maybe it's just what our parents taught us. I think if Sagittarius is ruled by your fourth house, this is actually a really good time to get in contact with the truth of your inner child and sort of acknowledging that. Maybe your inner child's truth is much different from how you would actually like to live your life. But the first step in changing that is acknowledging that, right? So if you have your fifth house in Sagittarius, it kind of reminds me of, now I just talked about the book, The Ethical Slut, last episode, but in that book, there was a quote that says, that sort of asks us, is having less pleasure more virtuous? I can't remember if they said less pleasure or less sex, but they said, is having less sex more virtuous? And maybe the answer is no, but I think society has taught us, yes, having less sex is more virtuous. So I think if you have this full moon in Sag highlighting your fifth house, you may be examining where have you been holding yourself back? I'm not just meaning in sex, in the realm of sex necessarily, but in the realm of pleasure. Where have you been taught that it's not safe to have fun, it's not safe to let go, it's not safe to feel pleasure? Somehow doing those things makes you less ethical or less moral or less virtuous. Maybe this full moon is really about letting those things go and letting yourself feel your body and feel pleasure and feeling the divine right to your pleasure. Because with that Sagittarius spirituality, it's sort of about how sex and pleasure can also be a spiritual experience. So your spell work for this new moon could be focused a lot on sex magic. So that could be something. By the way, if you want to learn more about sex magic, the Ethereal Odysseys, Allison, we are coming back together for a second collab. This time we're doing it on her podcast, and probably the next month we're going to be doing an episode all about sex magic. So stay tuned for that. Going back to your birth chart, if Sagittarius rules your sixth house, I would say right now, I feel like the sixth house, of course, it has to do with both health and service, but But I really was feeling intuitively that this was going to be more about your health and how you treat your body. So during this full moon, you're going to be examining your truths about your personal health. So are you trying to meet an expectation of some Instagram workout fanatic? You know, are you killing yourself to do some fad diet like keto or a celery juice cleanse or something, and it's really not working for your lifestyle? You know, something about this moon for you may highlight just how you're treating your body and why you're doing it. And this kind of reminds me of how, you know, in the past I thought that, you know, in order to be healthy, in order to have like a strong body, the only form of exercise that I could do was running. So I'd run a lot, and it actually wasn't that great for my body, and I don't feel like my body is specifically built to be a runner's body, and I'd actually be in a lot of pain, and I think I did myself more harm than good by running. But I was just doing it because I thought that's just how you were healthy and that's how you stayed active. But it wasn't until I found this year, specifically in 2019, I sort of found out that I much prefer taking hikes in nature, taking long walks, doing yoga, and my body feels so much better doing those things too. So for you, you may be having a similar realization, like, okay, it makes me feel good to do this type of exercise. It may not be the popular Soul Cycle class, but this is the type of exercise that I can really do and I can really enjoy. And that could be have something to do with the food you're eating too. Like, you finally find a diet, or you finally find a way of eating that really works for you during this time that makes you feel good, mind, body, and soul. Okay, so for the seventh house, if your seventh house is ruled by Sagittarius, I would ask you, what truths are you holding on to concerning relationships that are no longer serving you or your partner? The one example, for some reason, that I thought of was I was thinking about the Chelsea Handler documentary on Netflix about marriage. And in that documentary, it's kind of funny, she like interviewed a bunch of couples that like don't sleep in the same bed, like they have separate bedrooms. And that kind of made me think about like what it'd be like to have Sagittarius full moon hitting your seventh house, because you may be having a realization like, wow, this like traditional way of being with my partner, aka like sleeping in the same bed, it just makes me miserable. It makes me so unhappy. I do not like sleep. I love my partner, but I don't like sleeping in the same bed as them. I think it's time to do separate bedrooms. And sure, maybe some people would think that is weird, but it makes us happy. And you know, it makes our relationship so much better. So we're just going to do what we want to do. And that's our personal truth. And if you don't like it, fuck it. Like, like there could be some kind of realization like that happening throughout your relationship. You could be also, you know, if you're not partnered right now and Sag is still going through your seventh house, I would say you're examining more like, how do I say this? Like the timelines that we've been conditioned to go off of. Like maybe there's a pressure there's sort of like this heteronormative pressure, I think, for women specifically, that like they need to, you know, be dating and this long before they have sex with this person, and they need to, you know, be dating 2 years and then get engaged, and then the engagement is 1 year, and then you gotta get married, and then you gotta have family and kids and la la la. And I think especially if you're not partnered at this time, I think this moon's about examining those timelines and being like, why the fuck do I give a shit about that? You know, like, that's really not even my belief. That's someone else's belief. And hell, I don't need to follow anybody's timeline when it comes to marriage, dating, family, kids. If I want to, I could have kids right now and not even marry my partner. Or if I wanted to, I could be dating my partner for 2 weeks and then move in with them, and if that felt right for me, I'm gonna do it. So that's the kind of thing that we may be examining with that. Now, if you have Sagittarius in your eighth house, This full moon may be bringing to light some truths about your personal suffering. So, and I know the eighth house doesn't necessarily have to do with suffering, but this is what was coming through from spirit. So I want to ask you, why are you suffering? How are you becoming a victim of your situation? And could you use this current suffering that you're going through as an opportunity to transform? And I think if you do have Sag in the eighth house, I think what you're trying to do with this full moon, you really want to figure out how to use your suffering as a doorway or as a portal into discovering something deeper about yourself. So I would say this is a really good full moon energy to go deep within that psyche. Really ask yourself what negativity or negative thought patterns need to transform into something more positive, something that can make your life a little bit lighter. There's a sense that we could make the heavy things much lighter during this time. Now, if you have your ninth house in Sagittarius, I would say that you're specifically probably going to be discovering some truth about your spirituality. This is sort of the time where you want to decide to be your own priest or your own guru. It's sort of about taking little pieces from everyone right now and making spirituality your own practice. And I think true spirituality is about designing your own way of doing things. And like I said in the beginning, right? Like as a witch, like I don't really go off of a lot of different directions. I call myself a witch, but I don't really have a lot of spell books. I think I have like 2 books about witchcraft total, and that's it. So it's more about feeling through my personal truth with witchcraft and what it means for me. And you could be doing that too with your own version of spirituality. So I would encourage you at this time to sort of put away the spirituality books and the witchcraft spell books and everything and just close it and see what's really coming through about you and from your spirit guides. And another example would be maybe you're trying to learn tarot at the moment, and let's say you're just so addicted and hooked to your guidebook. Every time you pull a card, you rush over to the guidebook and try to look up what the card may mean. This could be a really good time to put down that guidebook and just go to spirit and see what spirit is saying about the card. If you have Sagittarius ruling your 10th house, I would say you are coming into a truth about the purpose you have in this world. It's more about your reputation, and I think you're going to be asking yourself what it is that you want to be known for in this lifetime. And I'm not necessarily talking about your career path, but I'm talking about really and truly, like, what is the feeling you want people to have towards you? And it kind of reminds me of the Maya Angelou quote. She says, you know, at the end of the day, people will not remember what you did, but rather how you made them feel. So does your purpose and does your reputation have something to do with making people feel good? And does it have something to do with helping others? Or is it about ego for you? Do you want to be praised for your greatness but not help others? Or do you want to just make a bunch of money off of people without actually making a difference in their lives? These are sort of the things that we may be examining, the separation between our ego and our true purpose. If Sagittarius is your 11th house, I would say you're coming into a new profound truth about your group dynamics. If something about your group dynamics feels off right now, I think it may be illuminated during this time. It could be about any toxic people in your dynamic, but actually what I'm feeling intuitively is I think if you have Sag in your 11th house, I think you have to find groups of people with like-minded interests. Especially if you are wanting to pursue your passions more. So this could be anything. And I don't exactly know who I'm talking to right now, but I'm like getting this weird intuitive hit. Like if you want to be like a famous photographer. It's time to join a photography group where, let's say, this group of people get together every Saturday and you go for photograph nature and you guys compare pictures or something. If you want to be a psychic reader, it's time to go to your metaphysical shop and join their club, join their practice reading groups. If you want to be a Reiki practitioner, it's time to find a Reiki share, a group of people who trade Reiki on each other and practice and share ideas. You guys get the picture. Whatever your passion is, now it's time to really connect with others who have the same passion. And I think you may be surprised by how meeting people with the same passion may inspire you to go further. Now, lastly, if you have Sagittarius in your 12th house and this full moon is highlighting your 12th house, I would say you're probably going to have a sort of deep knowing. How do I say this? Yeah, deep knowing. Like, I think you may realize something that you've known all along, but you haven't wanted to admit to yourself. It's sort of that moment where you think, oh yeah, and I knew that. And I knew that all along, but I didn't want to see it. Or I felt that in my bones since I was small. I felt in my bones that I had intuition or that I was an empath ever since I was a child. Yet I didn't want to see it until right now. There could just be an illumination happening within your subconscious. And I think also it's a really good time for you to be doing dream work. So definitely be writing down your dreams and interpreting them with anything that you may have. I mean, if you have a dream dictionary or an online, I know you can just Google like an online dream dictionary and things will come up. Really focusing in on like what is happening in your dreams lately and how does it apply to your personal transformation right now. Okay, so that is everything I think I have to say about this Sag full moon. I hope you guys enjoyed the more zoomed in perspective of where this full moon is hitting you right now. I will film a video on Instagram today and put it up. It'll be more of like the tarot forecast. So if you do want to watch that, head over to my Instagram later tonight and that should be up. I'd also say that because I'm putting this episode out on the day of the full moon, I'd say it's a rule of thumb with every full moon and new moon, at least for me, I always consider that I have about 48 hours to do whatever ritual or spell or cleanse or whatever I'm feeling like doing. I have about 48 hours after the full moon actually takes place to do it. So don't be panicked if, you know, I said something that resonated with you and you're like, oh my God, but the full moon's running out of time. I'm not going to be able to, you know, release this or do a spell or a ritual. Don't worry. You have some time. So don't feel panicked. And if you resonated with any of that, please let me know. I'm going to take a quick break and then I will come back and we'll talk about the aspects in your birth chart. Thanks, guys. All right, guys, I'm back, and I'm going to give you a little introductory course on the aspects in your birth chart. Now, can I say, and I've said this before, the aspects, like learning more and diving deeper into the aspects of astrology is definitely like more of like an intermediate level of astrology. So I would say like, even if you're a beginner at astrology, like still listen to this. I think I've made it easy enough to understand. But like really at the end of the day, if you are like a true student of astrology, you're trying to learn how to read a chart, how to interpret your own chart, things like that. There's really no way to get around it. Like you are going to have the signs, the planets and the houses memorized. You really have to have those things down pat before you start getting involved with the aspects. Because let's say with the aspects, let's say I give you, okay, what does Jupiter square Neptune mean? Well, if you don't know what Jupiter means and you don't know what Neptune really means, how can you know what a square means between them? So the thing about learning astrology is there's so many layers. And I think specifically when we're looking at birth chart interpretation, like knowing the aspects and seeing which aspects are going on in the chart, that's sort of the highest level of interpretation. That's where most astrologers will start. Whereas with like Instagram astrology and usually the type of astrology that I put out there on my podcast, it's more like the beginner's astrology. Like, hey, what does it mean to have your Mars in Gemini and et cetera, et cetera? But in reality, like if I'm doing astrological work with a client, really the first thing I'm going to look at is I'm going to look at their aspects first. I'm going to look at what's going on with that. I'm not specifically going to zoom in on, hey, this person is Venus in Leo. No, I'm actually going to look at, oh, this Venus in Leo is being squared by Pluto in the fifth house. Like that's where the higher level of interpretation lies. It's how the planets are interacting with each other. And I think that's what most people don't understand about astrology, maybe. And they think a birth chart interpretation is just someone like sitting down with them and saying, okay, your sun in Leo means this, your moon in Pisces means this, your Mars in Taurus means this. When in reality, there's so much more to it. And even though I'm going to give you like the very basics of sort of understanding what's going on with the aspects in your chart, I'm not going to get into detail. Like it's not like I'm going to go and list what each aspect may mean. I mean, that would take hours. There's like, not unlimited, but there's so many different possibilities with the aspects. I would say if you are, you know, after listening to this part of the episode, if you are interested in like reading more into what the aspects specifically mean in your chart, I would suggest there's like a classic astrology textbook by Robert Pelletier, and it's just called Planets in Aspect. You can get it for around $20 used on, I got mine off of Abe Books, ABEBOOKS.com. That's where I would suggest buying used books. That's just where I get all of my astrology books. So I'll leave that book mentioned in the show notes for you guys if you do feel the need to like investigate your aspects a little bit further. Or, you know, maybe you're just interested in surface level astrology. You find it interesting, but you're never really going to dive in that deep to your birth chart personally. That's when, you know, you hire an astrologer, right? You can also hire an astrologer to do this kind of interpretation work for you. And I would say, before I even go into the aspects and things like that, before you try too hard to interpret your own aspects, I would say be wary. Just because interpreting your own aspects and interpreting your own chart in general, it's important, but it also can be sort of the same trap as, let's say, reading your own tarot cards. You may be biased to your own perspective. And I think that's why it's important, even for me, or even for someone who's really, you know, pursuing this as their career. Of course, you know, get a personal or a professional birth chart reading. Get someone who really knows their shit to help you understand your chart better and give you more of a perspective. Now, for all of you sweet, lovely people who message me about inquiring if I do birth chart readings, again, that is coming. I'm waiting for Spirit to give me the go, but I would say probably by the end of the summer, I should have something up with that. So thank you so much for wanting to trust me with your soul and your astrology. And in the meantime, I'm just offering tarot readings on Etsy at the moment. Those links are also in the show notes. So I just want to say that right now. I also want to say, even though aspects are probably the most important thing in your birth chart, There's so much more to take into account. Like, again, we have the planets, we have the signs that are the planets are in. What shape is your chart in? Is it a bowl shape? Is it a bucket? Is it dispersed? Do you have any stelliums? Which planets are in retrograde? Where are your nodes? There's all these things that we have to take into account. So I don't think anybody, including me, as hard as I'll try, nobody can really explain how to read a birth chart over a podcast, right? But I do kind of want to give you the 411 about what's going on in your chart. Now, I will say that you do want to have your chart out for this. I think astrocharts.com is the best chart generator that I've found, just because I think specifically they list out all of your aspects really nicely, and they list them in order of orb. So they list all of the 0 degree orbs first, and then the 1 degree, 2 degree, 3 degree, so on and so forth. I will be referring to orbs throughout this podcast, and an orb is just the distance that the planet is from another planet. So if something is at a 0 degree orb, it means it's a very tight aspect. So let's say like the sun and the moon are conjuncting each other at a 0 degree orb, that means the sun and the moon are sitting on top of each other and there's no distance between them. If the sun and the moon have a 1 degree orb and they're still conjunct, that means they just are about 1 degree apart from each other. So that's what I mean by orb. Typically in a birth chart, I use a pretty tight orb, like a 3 degree orb. At least I'll look at those aspects first. The first aspects that draw my eye are the tightest aspects. So any aspect like a 0 degree square, a 0 degree trine, anything like that, it's really important. It'll catch my eye first. And then I'll sort of back up and see, okay, what's at 1 degree? What's this 2 degrees? What's this 3 degrees? If that makes sense. So that's the thing with the orb. Now, what are aspects? I would say at a metaphysical level, the aspects are sort of our agreements we've come to Earth with. And remember, the birth chart, at least it's my belief that the birth chart is sort of the exact karma that our soul carries into this lifetime. Our soul will wait to the exact moment to come into this life with that exact karma in order to fulfill our soul contract. And there are certain things in the birth chart that point to past life karma specifically, at least for me. Mainly what planets were in retrograde when you were born. Those can definitely be about past life lessons, where your north node and south node is. I think really strongly that has to do with past life and present life situations. Also, Chiron has also really always struck me as a very past life sort of asteroid, although it does have a lot to do with the wounds that you experience in this lifetime. I think it also has to do with your soul's wounds. Now, the aspects are, again, they can have to do with our past lives, and they can just, I think, in general, have to do with the lessons that we've agreed to learn in this lifetime. And psychologically, the aspects that are going on in our charts, so the squares, the trines, the oppositions, the conjunctions, the sextiles, those are the major aspects I'm going to be talking about today. That is our psychology. That's our psyche. That is how our mind works. That is why we think the way we think. I would say that, and this isn't being said to like scare anybody or like make anybody like really want to investigate like why they have this or that. But I would say that if someone does have a mental illness or a mental challenge, I don't really love the word mental illness, honestly, but let's say you're like me and you have anxiety, I would say for sure 100% that's going to be backed up by one of your aspects. If you have the tendency for to get depression. That's going to be backed up by one of your aspects in your chart. And I think that's going to be highlighted specifically when certain planets are transiting your natal chart. That's the other thing we have to keep in mind. There's a difference between your natal chart, which doesn't move, but then the transiting sky is always moving. So the transiting sky every single day are making aspects to your natal chart. Again, I think I could show you that better if I had a YouTube, but hopefully just stay with me over the phone for now. That's coming too. Long-term manifestation. But yeah, so again, the aspects, soul agreements, they're our psyche, our psychology. So a common way to explain the aspects that I've heard, you know, my astrology teacher uses this metaphor, and I've read this metaphor in books as well. Like the planets, if we were in a play, the planets are the actors, right? Now the zodiac signs are the actor's costume, right? So the zodiac sign is the costume that the planet wears. Where it is sitting, the house is sort of like the setting of the play. It's the setting of the character. And the aspects are actually the scene that is being played out on stage. So if you think about it, let's say you have, you know, Saturn and Pluto, you know, that's one character standing in one house in one specific costume, and it's squaring. Did I say Saturn and Pluto? Oh my God, I'm so dumb. Let's say, I meant to say Saturn and Pisces. If you have Saturn and Pisces in one house, you know, standing in a costume, and it's squaring, let's say, Pluto in Gemini. That's another costume. And what's the scene that they are acting out together? Well, a square between Saturn and Pluto is going to be a lot more violent and harder of a scene acted out versus, let's say, a Jupiter and a Venus trine. That's going to be actually a really happy scene that's being acted out. So it depends. The aspects have a lot to do with our psychological behavior. So that's what you have to understand about the aspects before going into it. Now, in each person's chart, something that I think most astrologers do, like when they're interpreting a birth chart, they will find something called the strength and the focus of the chart. So for lack of a better term, because I don't think there are negatives and positives in either astrology or either tarot, but for lack of a better term, we'll just use the words negative and positive. The strength of your chart is your most positive aspect. And I would say the positive aspects are the trines and the sextiles and often conjunctions. But it depends what planets are being conjuncted. Those are your most positive things about your chart. Those are your talents. Those are the things that come easily to you. I would say look at your chart right now. And first off, look at if you have any trines between the major planets. And I'm not talking about the asteroids. I'm talking about the major planets. Sun, Moon, Venus, Mercury, Jupiter, Sag, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. Any of those, are they trining each other? And are any of those trines at like a 0 degree or a 1 degree orb? I would say that would probably be your strength of your chart. The trines in your chart are typically the strength. Could be a sextile, could be a conjunction, depending. And here's where you kind of need that astrologer, that person to help you, because the astrologer will have that intuitive hit about where your strength is. But if you're exploring your own chart, there's no harm in trying to locate your own strength too. Now with your focus. That is the challenge of your chart. And you'll have many challenges in your chart throughout your life. But your main challenge would be your squares, your oppositions. And quincunxes, we're not going to talk about quincunxes in this episode, but quincunxes are another minor aspect that can make us feel very uncomfortable. So again, take a look at your chart, take a look at your aspects. That's why I like astro charts, because they type out every single aspect that you have in writing. And look if you have any squares between major planets at a 0 degree orb or a 1 degree orb. That would probably be your focus of your chart. So that's first off something you're going to want to focus in on, right? Like when you're first starting to interpret your own chart, you want to know your strength and you want to know your focus, because that's going to help you come to more self-awareness about your behavior and the way you think and your thought patterns, etc., etc. And isn't the whole point of going into astrology and learning about your birth chart? It's not just for fun. It's to develop a greater sense of self-awareness, right? And I think that's what people are missing about the whole astrology thing. Like, they think it's cute that they know their sun, moon, and rising, but how does that help you, right? How are you using that to be a better person? Because you really can use astrology to better your life and be a better person. And I think that actually, that part of it comes in the aspects. Now, I'm going to briefly explain what a square is, what a trine is, what a conjunction is, what a sextile is, and what an opposition is. So again, I'm not going to get into too many specifics. I may give an example here and there, but this is something that you're going to want to dive deeper in with a textbook. I think the reason for this episode is to just give you a general overview. A lot of people don't really know what it means to have a square or an opposition. And you may be listening to an astrologer or reading an astrologer's blog, maybe mine, for instance. And maybe you read my weekly forecast and you see that I'm typing, like, for instance, today, Jupiter is squaring Neptune. And you see my interpretation and you're saying, where in the world is she getting this? Well, I'm factoring in the actual meaning of the aspect, right? A Jupiter square Neptune is going to be completely different than a Jupiter trine Neptune. So it's not just about the planetary energy. It's not just about the zodiacal energy. It's about the aspect's energy. And the aspect is the actual angle that the planets are making. Okay, so in general, what does a square mean? Now, you may remember back in math class, they taught you a square is a 90 degree angle. So your squares are your most challenging scenes of your play, right? If any of your characters, quote unquote, or your planets in your play or your birth chart are acting out a square, this is again going to be a life challenge. This might be the kind of scene from a play. Let's say this is like when Hamlet stabs Polonius through a curtain. Okay, that's definitely a square. But I have to say, you know, I really love a square. Squares are my favorite aspect in astrology. I don't know why. I think I love people who have a ton of squares and challenges in their chart. And I think it makes for an interesting person and an interesting life. And I think most of us do have a square here or there in our chart. I happen to have a very tight square. I have two squares that are extremely tight in my birth chart. I have Moon square Pluto at a 0 degree orb. And then I have Jupiter square Saturn at a 1 degree orb. So those two squares are my biggest challenges, but also my biggest blessings. And it's something that, like, I think just even coming into awareness of what that means for me, with the help of myself, with the help of reading books, and then with the help of my astrology teacher, it's helped me become more self-aware of my challenges and my thought processes. So I think squares in specifically can be really deep medicine about how our minds work. But I also think squares, they're two planets that are sort of fighting together. But also, I think these two planets are really just asking for some love and attention. And I think it's our squares that really motivate us, like I said, to do that self work. It's the squares that motivate us to go to therapy. It's the squares that motivate us to come to a deeper level of self-awareness and actually realizing how your squares affect you can help you come into your personal power and can help you overcome the challenges of your own mind. And there may be a feeling of hopelessness or helplessness when it comes to a square, like, oh my God, I'm never gonna overcome this part about myself, or I'm never gonna figure out a way to stop being such an overthinker, or like whatever. It can be sort of this desperation with a square. But I think that's why it's so important to become aware of our square. Become aware of the square. I like that. And once we become aware of the square, that's when we can really start to heal that. Now, I'm not saying that we're ever going to fully overcome what is inside of the square, but we can become aware of it, right? And awareness is really what matters the most at the end of the day. Now, there's also something called a redirect in astrology. A redirect is something, is sort of like a way out, quote unquote, of our deepest challenges. So let's say you have a really deep challenge. Let's say you have Sun squaring Pluto. So it's a deep, deep challenge about your psyche, about your self-worth, about your, I don't know, your tendency to not take care of your mental health. I'm just making this up. I'm not saying you have these problems if you have Sun square Pluto. So you have that challenge aspect, but your Sun is also trining Jupiter. So that trine or that positive aspect that's happening to the Sun, that's going to be your redirect. That's sort of the way out of that square. The redirect can also happen in the transiting planets. Let's say, yeah, you have this Sun square Pluto, but let's say Venus goes over your Sun and you kind of find a new way to develop self-love that's not so self-deprecating. Again, I'm just making this up. These are different ways that we can sort of help ourselves with our squares. We're never helpless. We may feel helpless when it comes to our squares, but there's always help. And remember, the planets always move, right? We're never completely stuck in where we are. We're always going to have those transits going above us in the sky. So yeah, square 90 degree angle, that's our most challenging aspect. So definitely locate the square in your chart that has the tightest orb. Okay, so now for the opposition. An opposition's happening at 180 degrees. We already talked about an opposition a little bit at the beginning of the episode when I talked about the full moon. It actually is an opposition between the sun and the moon, right? And the sun and the moon, sun at in Gemini, moon in Sag, they're creating a 180 degree angle across from each other, right? And that's why we consider that an opposition. And opposition is another challenge aspect. And think back to, the zodiacal opposites. So an opposition can only happen between one sign and its opposite. So Gemini can only oppose Sag, vice versa. Virgo can only oppose Pisces and vice versa. Aquarius can only oppose Leo and vice versa. Scorpio can only oppose Taurus and vice versa. And Cancer can only oppose Capricorn. And then Aries can only oppose Libra. So each opposition has its own flavor, right? An opposition between Gemini and Sagittarius, no matter what the planets are opposing each other, it's always going to be different than, let's say, a Virgo Pisces opposition. It's going to have its own flavor, its own its own personality. Now, if you remember, I always say that you and your zodiac opposite have things to learn from each other, and you are very much alike in some ways. So there is a sense that an opposition, they can work together at times. Those energies can complement each other. Let's take Virgo Pisces opposition. Those two archetypes, are they very different? Of course, but are they very much the same? Absolutely. Are there times where a Virgo Pisces opposition, regardless of the planets involved, are there times where they can work together very well? Absolutely. Are there times when this opposition can be fighting like hell? Absolutely. So the opposition, we're kind of balancing the two planets working together and fighting against each other. There are times when the two planets, or you can also have multiple planet opposition. For instance, I just read someone's chart the other day, and they had Mercury, Neptune, and Venus all conjunct in the exact same degree, opposing their Neptune, and the opposition was with Capricorn and Cancer. So you can have more than one planet opposing another planet, so you're gonna have to keep out an eye out for that in your chart. So these planets can really work together to achieve something great, but then the next day they're arguing all over the place and they can't see each other's side. So I would say that in an opposition, the planets that are involved in the opposition, they're constantly questioning each other's motives, and they're questioning if they can really work together. So I would say the goal of becoming aware of your oppositions would sort of be becoming more aware of your sort of, again, we talked about this in the Gemini episode, those inherent dualities within all of us. There are going to be some times when you contradict yourself. There are contradictory parts about your nature, and that very much shows up in your oppositions. Now, let's go to a trine. So a trine is 120 degrees, and a trine happens with signs in the same element. So water signs can only trine each other, fire signs can only trine each other, earth signs, etc., air signs, etc., can only trine each other. And a trine is the most beneficial aspect in a chart. A trine, I like to actually kind of think of it as sort of a gift from God, or it's sort of like a past life gift that you have brought into this lifetime. There's sort of a sense that you have a talent or with a trine, or there's just something that you're really good at that you don't really have to try that much. It's just what you're here to do. Trine is kind of like when someone says, wow, you know, that person just has it. It just comes naturally to them. That's the feeling of a trine. So again, overall, it's a very positive aspect. Now, I would say, though, you know, someone with tons of trines in their chart, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to have like an easy and great life. A trine can sometimes turn into laziness, or it can sort of be a crutch that someone just leans on, because again, trines are things that come easily to us. Like for instance, I was kind of making up like an aspect that could have this example, and I made up, like, let's say you have a trine between Venus and Taurus, and you have Venus and Taurus right on your ascendant. It's right in your first house, and it's trining Jupiter in Virgo in your fifth house. So this person is going to be so extremely attractive. They're going to be so beautiful. Maybe they're a model. Maybe they really bank off of the fact that they are attractive. But yet in this lifetime, they tend to rely on their beauty a little bit too much. And when it comes down to it, you know, at the end of the day, they realize that maybe they've never had like a significantly close and intellectual bond with a romantic partner, because their whole lives they just have felt like no one really sees them for who they are. It's kind of like the song Lana Del Rey, like, will you still love me when I'm no longer young and beautiful? that would be how I would interpret that aspect. And it's kind of to show that your trines, you want to use them to your advantage, but you also don't want to use them as your crutch. Because I would actually say the aspects that we want to get the most intimate with are the squares. And you, again, you want to figure out how to trine your square, and you want to square your trine, if that makes sense. You want to figure out a way to use your trine as well, because the energy from a trine and a sextile, it can kind of just sit there at the same time. Again, that's where that laziness comes in. It can sort of be an unused talent, and you really need to put it into action to actually get something out of it. Now, a conjunction. This happens when planets are in the same sign, same element. They're pretty much right on top of each other or within a very tight orb. So when planets are conjunct, this means the planets are married. They're married for better or for worse, right? They have to figure out how to get along together while they live so closely with each other. Now, and some planets really do get along together. And that's where with the conjunctions, with all the aspects, but I think the conjunctions in particular, it really depends which planets are sitting together. Like, for instance, if you had two planets that really get along together, let's say the Moon and Neptune, they're conjunct in your eighth house. I would say you're extremely psychic. You're extremely intuitive. Those two planets conjunct together are really going to be the source of your intuitive gifts. But then let's say you have two planets that don't really get along. Let's say you have Saturn and Jupiter conjunct. Now, there can be times when these planets get along, but other times they're really just fighting. Saturn wants to get down to work, whereas Jupiter wants to have fun and expand. So this is where you'll have to investigate too. Where are your conjunctions? What's the vibe of the planets? What are they doing together? What are they creating together? So the conjunction is sort of like the in-between. It's not negative. It's not positive. It's just an energy that's there that you can use to your advantage. I would say if you're around my age, you probably have Uranus and Neptune maybe conjunct. I would say a lot of people listening to this probably have Uranus and Neptune within 3 or 4 degrees of each other. They're conjunct, and they're probably in Capricorn conjunct together. So what that means for my generation, if you think about it, here, I'll do a loose interpretation to give you an example. Uranus, the planet of revolution. Neptune, the planet of spirituality. Okay, hello, my generation's all about that revolutionary spirituality. A lot of people in my generation with these two planets conjunct, they're kind of leaving the sort of organized religion kind of lifestyle. I would say this is probably where the trend amongst people my age with astrology is coming from. I would say that's definitely like a very astrology loving aspect. If you have Neptune conjunct Uranus, you're really trying to find your own sense of truth and your own personal dogma, much like the energy of the Sag full moon. That's just a short example, but you may have that aspect. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Now, a stellium can also be a conjunction, but a conjunction isn't necessarily a stellium, if that makes sense. So, for instance, I'll take J.K. Rowling's birth chart. I have it pulled up. A stellium is when you sort of have a cluster of 4 or more planets in a certain house. And J.K. Rowling, she actually has a stellium in her 7th house, which is ruled by Virgo. And in that 7th house, she has Pluto at 0 degrees Virgo. She has Venus at 7 degrees Virgo. Uranus at 12 degrees Virgo. Pluto at 14 degrees Virgo. And Moon at 25 degrees Virgo. So, wow, she has a 5-planet Virgo stellium in her 7th house. Yet, out of all the planets I just listed, there's only two that are truly conjunct, and that would be Uranus at 12 degrees Virgo and Pluto at 14 degrees Virgo. So they're at a 2-degree orb. They're at a very tight orb together. And I would actually say probably that Uranus and Pluto conjunction in Virgo in her seventh house, I think that has a lot to do with the way she's been able to be a revolutionary writer. She's been able to touch the entire world in a very unique way with her writing. Now, she has other aspects in her chart that I won't get into that make her like a very dedicated and beautiful writer. And there's actually a lot of in her chart that indicates that she does have a deep passion and a deep interest for the occult. Hence, Harry Potter, right? It's all about the occult studies. But I thought I'd give you that example. And the last major aspect that I wanted to tell you about is a sextile. So this is when two signs are 60 degrees apart. And this is a good aspect. It means that the planets are friendly with each other. Again, like a trine with a sextile, you could have untapped potential. I would say a sextile is typically less significant than a trine, yet it's always good when we have sextiles because it means the planets are getting along. I would say sextiles are opportunities for healing. They might not be tapped into all the time, but there are certain times in our life when we can use our sextiles to our advantage. For instance, let's say in my chart, I have Venus sextiling my Chiron. So I think I have an opportunity for healing my wounds, my soul wounds, through the embodiment of the planet Venus. And have I completely done that yet and come into awareness of it? No, but it's definitely there to be had in this lifetime if I choose to become aware. And again, the things I just covered, they're very general, and I thought I'd just give you that information so you can start getting to know what the aspects are a little bit better, maybe doing some more research into your own chart, seeing what aspects you have in your own chart. Again, the aspects can be kind of difficult and very foreign, especially if you feel like you are a true beginner who's still learning the signs and the houses and the planets. If you're on that level, completely keep studying that and you'll get to the aspects soon enough. And there are more minor aspects that I didn't cover. So like the quincunx, which we can talk about in a different episode. And then it's worth mentioning that in any astrology book, you might start reading about the syndromes of a chart. So those are multiple planetary aspects coming together. So you may have heard of the phrase T-square, a grand cross, a grand trine, a kite, a yod, things like that. Those are like multiple planetary aspects. Those are what we call syndromes in the chart. So you may also have one of those in your chart. I'm not going to get into depth with the major syndromes on this episode, but definitely another episode. But maybe not definitely at the same time, just because I'm not sure if I can fully explain those to the level that I would like to explain those in a podcast where you like can't see a visualization of what I'm talking about. So maybe I'll save that for when I make my YouTube. But yeah, anyways, know that I just basically gave you very, very basic information. There's so much more to learn. Again, I would definitely recommend, if you're looking into the aspects of your birth chart, I would recommend the book Planets and Aspects by Robert Pelletier. I will put that in the show notes. And yeah, I think that's about all I have for you guys today. Thanks so much for listening. Happy Sag full moon. Again, let me know how your Sag full moon is affecting you. Let me know if you're resonating with anything that I'm saying on this podcast. Thank you guys so much for the support. Thanks for talking to me on my Instagram, for ordering my Etsy readings. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for supporting me. And I look forward to talking to you guys next. So thanks so much. Talk to you guys soon.